time. Because I know you are a cynic, but I think I can convince you that your broken people can get better if they really want to. Or at least that's what I have to tell myself if I am hoping to survive. And one day this will all be over. Hello, everyone, and welcome to Talk Recovery Radio, 100.5 CFRO. And, we're at the Columbia and Hastings in the downtown east side. We come to you every Thursday with live radio shows talking about addiction and recovery issues and the hundreds and hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of pathways to recovery. And sometimes we talk about addiction, too, because we'd like to talk about that. I'm in studio with my co-host, Mr. Darren Gaylor.
Hey-o.
Hello, Darren. Francis Stone.
Woo-hoo.
Hello, Francis.
Hello.
So, big news. We like to start the show off with what's going on in hot news and addiction recovery. And our friend, is your friend? Dr. Perry Kendall is retiring. So, is it me, but I feel like that song in, you know, what is it? Wizard of Oz, Ding Dong, you know, that. I really do. I mean, I'm reading the news, I'm reading everything, and you know, Dr. Bonnie Henry has been appointed the new provincial health officer. So here's somebody that's been in power since, I think, 1999. He's been our provincial health officer. He's been to Portugal. He's been to Switzerland. He's talked to everybody that's created these amazing innovative treatment options to help curb overdose crisis in other countries. And yet when you hear Dr. Kendall speak at conferences, which I've actually sat through and listened, he always talks about those little snippets. And we've talked about that on Talk Recovery, where we talk about how Canada imports little snippets of harm reduction models that are in Europe, but never the whole thing. Like, we only do the one pillar, not the other three pillars, and how we only want to do decriminalization in British Columbia, but we don't want to talk about, you know, dissuading people to use drugs, which is what Portugal's principal base is, the Commission of Drug Dissuasion. So I kind of asked myself, like, that long we're in an overdose crisis, 4,000 people are dead, and here everyone's like, oh, you know, happy retirement, you're like one of the best Canadian citizenships, and I'm not really feeling that way.
What do you really feel, Giuseppe?
That's how I really feel. That's how I really feel. There's, you know, out of those 4,000 dead people, a few dozen of them are my friends.
Ding dong, the witch is
well,
dead.
Well, a few of my friends are dead.
Yes, no.
They couldn't access treatment because they didn't qualify for welfare and they couldn't afford private treatment. They're dead.
Right.
That doesn't happen in Portugal. That doesn't happen in Switzerland. So I'm just like, I don't know, like, happy retirement. Go. You know, my friends are dead. They couldn't access treatment. Or if they wanted to access treatment, they had to go through that humiliating process of going to welfare and proving. You know, my friend Donnie had to prove he was poor every time he wanted to go to welfare.
Yeah.
Like, that's not right. I'm supposed to celebrate that after you've been given the knowledge of what works in other countries. So, anyway, that's my rant for the day, so I'm pretty happy he's gone.
Giuseppe, do you know where the next lady stands on harm reduction?
She's been working alongside Dr. Perry Kendall for many years, so she's kind of like a protege. I don't know if it's many years, but she's been working alongside with him for a while. So she is part of the BC Center on Substance Use, who is actively trying to encourage recovery and equal access. BC Center of Substance Use is very familiar with the two-tiered system of healthcare in Canada, so they're diligently trying to have that not happen. There's more conversations coming out of the BC Center of Substance Use in regards to why should people have to qualify for welfare to access treatment. So there's more talk happening through the BC Center on Substance Use because of our conversations. I sit on one of the recovery stakeholder groups, so I bring it up every time I go pretty loudly. So I'm hoping that her connection to the BC Center on Substance Use, you know, does make prescription heroin more available. I hope that there are more consumption sites. I hope that there are more opportunities for people to have equal access to harm reduction. I also hope that she also fights for people that also want to access treatment, can get it on demand, and not have to prove that they're on welfare to get it.
Right. Speaking of welfare, Judy Darcy, MLA of Minister of Health and Addictions, is hosting a poverty reduction, a roundtable thing where people, give their ideas about how the province can reduce poverty, right? And so it's on Monday night. Check out her Facebook page, MLA Judy Darcy, and come out and talk about it, right? Because I think poverty is a huge factor in the reasons why people do struggle with addiction and all the rest of it. So yeah, I'll be there, and I look forward to seeing people that are also focused on that.
Well, that's our rant for today. Well, my rant anyway. That's how we start our show off with hot topics, what's going on in the news that affects us all in the addiction and recovery. That affects everybody in BC pretty much. And you can listen to us live every Thursday on 100.5 FM, Vancouver Co-op Radio. Talk Recovery Radio is powered by New West Recovery, which is Last Door Recovery Center and Westminster House. So shout out to them. And that's how we can get on air every Thursday. And don't forget, Co-op Radio is a membership-driven radio station, so there's no commercials. If you like our show, make a donation in the name of Talk Recovery, because every time you make a donation in our name, it makes us feel good and it pumps our egos. And if you want to be on our show, you can go to our Facebook page, facebook.com/Talk Recovery Vancouver. You can tell us you love us. You can tell us you hate us. You can let us know you want to be a guest, and we'll accept all those conversations. And we usually start our show off then with our guest, and Frances Stone will be doing our first interview today. And who do we got in studio, Frances?
Okay, well, first of all, I don't know if we want to be using the Facebook page. Don't tell us you hate us, because we'll just say, take your own inventory. But anyhow, today we are talking recovery with counselor, therapist, and life coach, Amanda Molyneux. Okay, yes, I said it perfectly. Okay, so we're going to talk about the law of attraction today, which, you know, is a little bit of a hot topic. I think that a lot of people from our conversation earlier maybe don't entirely understand the law of attraction. So, Amanda, can you tell us a little bit about what it actually is?
Yeah, thanks for having me. The law of attraction simply is that our thoughts create. And how our thoughts create is simple. Our thoughts will create an emotion, which then will result in an action. A really good example of that would be a joke. If I tell you a joke right now, you'll think, oh, that was a funny joke, get a feeling of being excited, and then that'll result in the action of laughing. So that's exactly how our thoughts create, and that's exactly really what the law of attraction is in a nutshell, is that what we think will actually result in our actions from creating an emotion.
But what if I don't laugh?
Well, then again, right, if you didn't think the joke was funny, then you would have an emotion of me feeling just content, not happy, and then your actions will result in you not laughing. So all the law of attraction is just the principle that our thoughts actually create. It's also based in quantum physics as well, that quantum physics says that at all times there's a lot of things always going on that our subconscious mind can see, but our conscious mind can actually only capture a little bit of it. So what we actually choose to consciously focus on will actually end up seeing. And that's also a basic principle in neurolinguistic programming as well, is that what we choose to focus on. Now, here's a really good example of that I'll use from my past. Now, in my past, I've had, say, boyfriends that have cheated on me. And if I repeat that pattern enough, now I'm expecting it. I'm like, well, now I've got a new boyfriend, and let's say that he's perfect. He would never cheat on me. However, if he comes home late, 10 minutes from work, I automatically like, oh, he must be cheating on me like the rest, because now I'm going to focus on that. If I see him late 5 minutes, I'm going to be like, oh, that's it, you're cheating on me. Or if he's like texting and I've got that, you know, that's what I'm choosing to focus on, like, oh, you texting. Rather than if I say, oh, well, I trust him, I'll find all the evidence where I can actually trust him until, you know, something actually seriously happens and says, maybe, oh, I'm cheating on you, right? So it's basically on the principle of what we consciously choose to focus on will gain evidence for. So you know, I know with the law of attraction, a lot of people will say, okay, it's only working the law of attraction if I'm getting what I want. Well, the thing is, if we're actually driving our own bus and being at cause, what's going to happen is we'll see, even when things show up in our life that we don't want, at some point we had actually thought about them, whether it be specifically or even just in general, and then they're going to end up showing up. So it's based in quantum physics. We're always doing it all the time with our thoughts, and what we've consciously choose to focus on is actually going to show up, and we're going to live into that, right? So back to the example with, say, the boyfriend, if you've been cheated on and I'm bringing that past forward with me, I'm always going to be looking for evidence of why he's not there. So that thought is going to create an emotion of not trusting, and then I'm going to act out in that particular way and be suspicious and worry and that sort
but
of thing.
But isn't there a part or a piece where maybe you look at your own boundaries, or you look at...
Oh, absolutely.
Do you know what I mean?
Absolutely. And see, now that's the other thing when it comes to emotions. So now our emotions are there to tell us that something needs to change. So really, technically, when I get angry, it's not that someone else made me angry. I've chosen to be angry in that situation. So let's just say he was actually cheating. Why not? He actually said I was cheating. Okay, now I'm angry. Okay, so of course our thought isn't going to change that, but I can take my thought and decide how I'm going to deal with that anger. I can either change my perception on the situation, or I can change my actions altogether. So a really good example of that would be, like, let's say I get home from work and I just leave my high heel shoes in the middle of the hallway, go do my thing, get some cookies and watch TV. Then all of a sudden, say my boyfriend comes home and he's in his construction gear and he's got mud on his boots and he walks right on my really nice high heel shoes. Now I'm angry. Now, I could go and yell at him and say, you know, it's your fault, or I could actually take my anger and say, what do I need to change about this situation? What boundaries do I need to put up, or what actions can I change? I mean, instead of yelling at him, I could A, put my shoes away in the future, B, I could just leave them, that's an option, if those shoes, you know, or I can choose to say it doesn't matter, they're just shoes. Those are three viable options that are there, so I can, yes, put up boundaries or change my perception on the situation.
But the other option is, as mm-hmm. well, is that you could just lose your mind. You could just be angry.
Absolutely.
I think sometimes when I used to practice the law of attraction or something like it, because I didn't entirely understand what it was, but I think I watched The Secret on cable or something. Mm-hmm. And I remember when I was still struggling in addiction before I came into recovery, I kept trying to control all the things around me. And I was like, I think it was a form of denial for myself. Like, it was like, no, I just have to think positively. Like, okay, yeah, we don't have food, but just think positive. And I think, like, there was a piece where I was, like, totally denying that there was all these problems around me. And I was just focusing on thinking positive. So what do you say to that?
Exactly. Now, a lot of times that's going to happen when there's been things in our past that are undealt with. Undealt with traumas are just going to cloud what we're actually seeing, and we're not actually going to see all of the options available to us. And that's really what it's just about, is having all the options available to you. It's not, no, there's no right or wrong, good or bad answer to anything of what you choose to do. It's just having all those resources available. And that's actually what I do in my private practice, is I help people to get past those traumas so they're able to see other things. So, for instance, let's say I was really traumatized by, you know, men and not trusting them from my past, and I carry that forward. And sometimes people need a little bit of extra help and some other extra counseling to actually kind of get past that and see that there are other options. I mean, the other thing with thinking positive, and I remember saying this just the other day to somebody, they said, Amanda, it's not working. Well, it's not just, if we just have one or two positive thoughts on a mountain of other negative thoughts, then that isn't quite enough. It has to be all in, and it's got to be something, it's got to be congruent. Every part of you has to actually want that, because it's the dominant thought that is the most dominant that you truly do want that is actually going to end up showing up.
Okay, but where does, like, I'm also an addiction counselor, and mm-hmm. so a big part of what I do in my practice is allow people to grieve. Mm-hmm. Just allow them to feel, allow them to cry, allow them to just admit and just put down those barriers that say that I have to be strong all the time and just cry their eyes out. And so if you're constantly, and this is where I get a little confused, is that I understand, like, you know, thinking positive is a positive thing, but when it comes to grief and childhood trauma and that sort of stuff, I think, like, I wonder how law of attraction can be utilized in that. Like, what's positive about childhood trauma?
Oh, absolutely nothing. Absolutely nothing. Nothing is. Now, how does the law of attraction actually blend into that is a very good question. So, myself, I was, when I was younger, my dad was very abusive. And by the time I was 12 years old, he actually went to jail for what had happened with me and my siblings. And actually, it made the newspaper. It was so bad. And then, at that point, I actually started going down the slippery slope of addiction and partying and just rebelling, and I was very, very, very angry. And when I was 19, my dad actually ended up committing suicide. Now, because I thought I was defective in some way from the abuse, I thought it was my fault some way, that I wasn't good enough, maybe I wasn't skinny enough, maybe whatever the case was, when my dad committed suicide, I made it even worse, and I was like, oh my God, it's my fault. It's my fault for putting him in jail, for telling on him. He wouldn't have done this, right? And here's where I really learned the value of the law of attraction in a situation like that. I ended up going to see a counselor who was a neurolinguistic programming practitioner. And what ended up happening was, is I really started to, I wanted to know why he had done it. And once the trauma was removed, I was able to look at the situation and go, wow, he did it because he was guilty. And the funny thing was, is out of the blue, we actually found a suicide note 3 years later. And by that time, I was completely addicted to heroin. I was on the street. I was not having a fun life. And I was about done with it. And then all of a sudden, out of the blue, my friend was like, hey, somebody found this in some of the stuff from your dad. I thought you might want it. And I read it. And it said that he committed suicide because he felt guilty and that he couldn't stop hurting children, and he didn't think it was fair, so he thought he would take his own life. And at that moment, my perception changed from making it about me and thinking it was my fault. And that was the whole reason I was doing heroin, because I felt terrible and I wanted to cover those feelings. But as soon as my perception shifted and I was like, it's not my fault, I was able to get off of heroin and really change my life around, because my thought now changed and created the emotion of, wow, understanding and acceptance for what had happened, and wow, there's nothing wrong with me. Of course, what happened to me wasn't right. However, it wasn't my fault. And then I was able to start putting the pieces together. Of course, I do life coaching and counseling. So there is always a first couple sessions of actual counseling, because yes, it's very important to actually feel those emotions, because we don't know, until we have those emotions, we don't know where we want to take it. So, you know, I just want to let you know, in my practice, I do counseling sessions first, and then life coaching is starting to do the sort of forward sort of motivation. But there is always the clearing up the past with the counseling that is done first. But that shift in perception that made me change my life around is, again, my thoughts created an emotion which then resulted in my action.
Yeah, wow, that's a really powerful story, Amanda. And honestly, I'm honestly, like, super just grateful that your dad left you that note, and that you were able to, like, put the pieces of yourself together and get to a place where you're also helping other people do the same thing. That's pretty amazing, and that's what we like to do on this show.
Thank you.
But I just want to go back to, like, how do you help your clients? Like, if a client comes in, like you say, like, when you say, like, you remove the trauma, is that part of just processing the trauma and talking to somebody about it? Because, I mean, a huge part of what a counselor does is just listen. I mean, there's there's direction, of course, and stuff, but so many people just have never talked about whatever, and they just need to just talk about it. I mean, that's half the solution, is just talking about it, right? We always think, like, we have to go to the grave with everything. I mean, so many people say that when they first come into the rooms. And, yeah, so, like, how do you help your clients? Like, you mentioned that you have some systems that you help. Like, what does that look like?
Yeah, so I do neurolinguistic programs. Programming is my main modality, also emotional freedom technique as well, which works really great. It's basically needleless acupuncture. With neurolinguistic programming is the main one for any sort of childhood trauma, and it was done on me, so I know it works. It's basically disassociating from the actual trauma. So when I look back on the abuse that happened to me as a kid, it's in black and white, it's no longer in color, and it feels like it's happened to somebody else. So the emotional charge is now gone from it. And And it's basically a meditation technique. The other thing, for instance, bullying and that sort of thing, it's really getting to the bottom of what we're making it mean. Because I know in my childhood, you know, I got bullied and picked on it, and I made it mean that I wasn't good enough. So it's about switching the perception as well. And that's done through talking about it as well. Because when we talk about it, we can explore it. And then when we move on to the life coaching part of it, once we've cleared up any sort of childhood trauma, you know, we really take a look at where the client wants to be. So I've created a system that's really easy to get results in your life really quick. And what that is we actually take all of the complaints that we have in one area of our life, and we take those complaints and we start transferring them into intentions of what we'd want. Now, it's not bad to have a complaint. A complaint's really good. Because a complaint comes from a desire to want something. So that's great. However, a lot of the times we'll just stop at the complaint. Now, with the law of attraction, what we think about, we're going to get. So if I've got a complaint that I can't trust men, then that's all I'm going to see, and that's all that's going to come back into my life. Now, that comes from a desire to have a trusting, loving relationship with somebody. So we take it one step further and we say, okay, well, how can we state that in the positive? And there's a couple of reasons why I do it. First of all, the subconscious mind doesn't hear negatives. If I was to say right now, don't think of a blue duck. What we did, that blue duck. Right? So what I do is I help clients to form their intentions in the positive and basically guide them on keeping every week to keep them to that, to break the pattern of the negative, like the
sun wanting thoughts. I like that, because right now I'm thinking my daughter's 10 years old, and I don't know if anybody else has a 10-year-old daughter, but she's a handful. She's always been a handful, but anyhow. And as soon as you said like negative thought, I'm like, my daughter drives me nuts. Like, it's like, so I'm thinking, okay, how can I turn that? Because you know she's so loving, but she is so dramatic, and I have two boys and they're just not like that. And yeah, anyhow, so I'm thinking, okay, how can I turn, that's the complaint, my daughter drives me nuts, how do I turn that into a positive?
Well, I mean, you know, I would probably change the perception of the driving you nuts, right? So, you know, is she excited? Is that the behavior, right? So no, she just drives you nuts. Okay, so I would just plain up go with, I think, you know, what's the desire? What do you actually want?
Okay.
Like,
so I want my daughter to do more things for herself.
Oh, okay. Okay.
So what I'm actually thinking, like, you know, because I think sometimes we get stuck in the complaint.
Yeah.
And my complaint, and I keep it in my head because obviously I don't want to say it to my daughter, like, you're driving me nuts.
Right. So I intend for my daughter to start doing more things for herself.
Right.
So every time you have that complaint, just stop yourself, and it, like a pattern interrupt with like an elastic or something on the arm works really well as well. I say, Amanda, stop, and then say your intention. So I intend for her to start doing more stuff for herself.
And I noticed too that before we began our interview today, that you did some tapping and stuff, right?
I did.
Is that part of law of attraction? Is it all sort of blend together, or what is that? Why did you do that?
It blends together. So why did I do that?
Yeah.
I did that because I was a little bit overly excited, a little bit nervous. And what that is called tapping, emotional freedom technique. And it really works good. It's amazing on any sort of unwanted emotion. It just stops it right in its path. And so I did that to get myself present and to kind of release some of the emotion. What it is it's actual meridian points in our body that we tap. And basically, it's kind of like sticking a screwdriver into the circuit of the back of a circuit of a cell phone, and it shorts it out. So it shorts out that emotion, that negative thought pattern. It can also be used to reinforce good emotions. The first time I used it, I was with my counselor and mentor that I had, and we were talking about my stepdad, and I got really, really upset. And all of a sudden, he started tapping on me, and by the time he got to the fourth point, I was like, I'm totally fine. It's great. So it really, really does work. And it's something that I use as well in my practice. Yes.
Cool. And I saw on your Facebook page as well that you call yourself a mind mechanic. Why do you call yourself a mind mechanic?
I do. Because I give people the tools that they need to be able to create what they would like in their life.
Go ahead.
I'm also a hypnotherapist as well. And yeah, so I can... I give people tune-ups, and I help them to create what they want in their life. And
I've never even heard that saying before, mind mechanic.
Yeah, you know, it's because I say that, you know, it's nobody's broken in need of fixing. However, they may just need a tune-up once in a while, and that's what I do as a mind mechanic, yeah.
I think most of our brains need a tune-up from time to time.
Well, this is it, right?
Yeah.
You know?
Well, you just, as you're talking, I'm like, you know, all of these concepts, like, you know, mindfulness, law of attraction, like, it's almost sad that they have to be given these, like, schoolings over here, you know? Like, they're not just, a natural approach, because they are. They're so humanistic, you know, as far as, you know, grasping concepts, changing perspectives. It's like all of these things, I believe, like I went and I like in my attempts of trying to, you know, get better, I, you know, I did neurofeedback, I did the tapping and all of these things. And it's a little discouraging for me, because at the time I'm trying to cure a heroin addiction by use of these things. You know what I mean? Like they're so necessary, like, you know, after that. Because we sometimes think, like, what's the cure? I'll do anything. And it's like, well, I mean, there's a lot of work involved in the stopping a very serious habit, such as addiction, mm-hmm. right? And then we just, if we stop that, you know, for whatever, however we do it, it's like we don't go any further, because I've stopped that big thing in my life that was creating so many problems. And so, like, I think many of us that have made these huge changes, like addiction, we sort of stop there, right? And then years, if we stay clean a few years, then we realize how necessary all of these, you know, just what you're describing, how important they are.
And a really good example of that is with smoking. Now, I used to smoke, and when I quit a few times, every nanosecond of the day, all I could think about was smoking, 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 and it took up my brain. It was a constant fight. Yeah. Once I actually went through all the stories of why I think I need to smoke, you know, and actually got through all those stories that were running in my subconscious and went, okay, so it makes me feel good. It, you know, it fills the void. No, it created the void. I won't be cool unless I do it. No, I stink. I'm going to miss out on something. No, I'm not. I'm actually going to miss out if I leave for that cigarette from the party. And once go through all those stories, you know, and same thing with addiction, you know, it's I'm just going to take another day away, did another day away. But see, if we're still thinking and focusing on it, then, you know, it's still going to be something in our minds, right? And I think where, you know, once people have made the great hurdle of losing, like, you know, getting off of drugs and getting clean, now it's time to start looking forward at what they want to do and focusing on that and starting to work towards that, mm-hmm. and really keeping our mind off of really where we've been. You know, there's not a day that I think of heroin anymore.
Right.
However, I mean, for a good 5 years after, it was a daily struggle. The struggle was real. And what I realized was I needed to start looking forward. What do I want? Now, when I look back, I mean, I walked up to the studio and I looked around, and, you know, years ago that was me, mm-hmm. and, you know, I'm so far away from it now, and it feels like I'm farther away from it than probably because I started to look forward, and it wasn't until I started to look forward that I felt farther away from it. When I was still every day just struggling to stay clean, I still didn't feel, even if it was 5 years, I didn't feel like that far away from it.
Right.
Because I was always like, oh, what am I missing out there? Right. And now, so I chose to start this company and to help people, because I was like, wow, I could take that experience. I can still hold on to it, but I can take it and look forward with it.
Right.
And, you know, I think that's the important thing, is finding something.
Yeah, because most people that are stuck, let's just call it that are stuck are having those emotional processes from the past, or from the, you know, that were created in some event in the past. And it's that guidance that we all need to sort of get past that's not, you know, the true emotional response that should be happening in this present situation, but we just keep carrying it and keep carrying it and keep carrying it.
You've nailed it. You know, funny story, I was having dinner with somebody and I offered them the rest of the salad and they gave me a look like, what is this supposed to mean? And I'm like, it doesn't mean anything. I was just being courteous. I actually didn't want you to take any of it. I wanted to eat it myself, right? So, you know, he was bringing forward a previous situation that he's had with somebody else. And at that moment, you know, and making it mean something totally different. So yeah. You're right, bringing those traumas forward. And that's what I helped to alleviate before we look at the life coaching part of it, right?
So you mentioned, I mean, your story with your dad's, pretty amazing story. And you said how much sort of was concluded with finding the note. Now, there's so many people in life never get to, find the note. They don't get that sort of that proof or that that thing that clears up all of that confusion and misunderstanding and unknowing. You know, like that's, I think, part of the being stuckness, is a lot of this process a part of, sometimes if you can't find the proof, create what you want it, what you want to believe in. If you can never be told the real reason, pick one that makes you feel better than how you currently are.
Well, that's one way to do it. And I realize that not a lot of people are going to have that same luck that I had.
Right.
However, what that enabled me to see was that I was making it about me. So if I'm working with someone that's not going to get that solid proof, coming down from the sky, then, I mean, the question is what are they making what's happened to them mean about them? And a lot of times they're just making it about themselves. I'm not good enough. Eating disorders will come from being bullied. People call you fat. That's it. Now I'm not going to eat because I'm not going to fit in unless I'm skinny. So again, they're making that mean about them. So many things, right? Being bullied, then we're going to have lack of self-confidence. We're not going to feel good about ourselves. Well, if we think about the law of attraction and I think I'm no good, what's going to happen when I go out to, I'm not even going to ask that guy out because I'm not going to think I'm good enough because of something from my past. So, it's about changing the perception on why the situation happened to them and that, it's not their fault, right? A big key to mine as well, before I found the note, was realizing that there is a cycle of abuse as well, especially with sexual abuse that, and it was something that actually had happened to my dad, and then that's the only way my dad knew, right? So, and just knowing that was part of the puzzle as well. But even just knowing that still wasn't enough for me to say, oh, well, you know what?
Right.
And it wasn't until I got older and when we put the pieces together. So, with somebody that doesn't have absolute proof, I'm sure they can create a story that works for you. That's good if that works. But I would look at, what they're making it mean about themselves and work on those particular issues, right?
Mm-hmm.
And bring them to a point, because most people, they just want to understand and accept to be comfortable in their own skin, right? So if we understand why somebody's done something, then it's so much easier to not make it mean anything about ourselves.
Right.
For instance, let's say, a guy dumps me, I can make it mean that I'm no good. Or I can just say, look, it's empty and meaningless. He just wants something different. And okay, then it's not for me and still feel 100% good about myself, right?
It's amazing because, we all need to say, you sit with a stranger and sometimes they're the ones that offer that perspective that, we could never grasp ourselves. What is, I know you talked a little bit about life coach. What's all of your training?
Yeah, so I'm a hypnotherapist.
Mm-hmm.
I'm a neurolinguistic programming practitioner. I'm a time techniques practitioner, and I'm a certified success coach, a life coach. Now, I do more neurolinguistic programming, law of attraction coaching. So the two modalities, hypnotherapy, time techniques, neurolinguistic programming, and emotional freedom techniques. Basically, psychotherapy is what I'll use in the counseling part of it to talk about and to you know, discover and really get to the nitty-gritty of why somebody's lack of confidence, not feeling comfortable in their own skin. Once we get to that point and we've got to a functioning level, then we look forward onto the life coaching part of it and start to actually create things in our lives.
Sounds like all of these really work very cohesively together.
They do, and they're all based in quantum physics, my favorite thing in whole wide world. I love it.
So, I mean, we could talk another 3 hours on all these different aspects. Mm-hmm. So, you know, how do you get people involved into finding more information on this? Do you have a website, Facebook page?
I do. I have a website. It's www.cyf, so create your future, NLP, neurolinguistic programming.com. I also have a YouTube channel where I do talk about the power of intentions and the law of attraction and give a lot of information about how the subconscious mind works. And if you go to YouTube in the search bar, it's Create Your Future with Amanda.
Wow.
So, yeah.
Well, that's amazing, and congratulations to all that you're doing. If you want to get in touch, Amanda Molyneux is her name. And, yeah, check out our Facebook page at Talk Recovery and check out more information on there. And, well, all you guys are here in the studio with us right now watching, so check that out. We'll be back with the personal story with Isidore. And for now, let's go to our first song. Like I Fight For You by Current Swell.
Like I fight for you. Like I fight for you. Would you travel so like I do? Like I travel to you. Like I travel to you. And would you fight for me? Oh, like I fight for you. Like I fight for you. For you. Would you fight for me?
And welcome back to Talk Recovery and Vancouver Co-op Radio, CFRO 100.5 FM. We are into our second half of the show today, and this is our personal story. And we have Isidore sitting in with us. Thanks for coming in.
Thank you for asking me to come in.
Yeah. So now, your story is you're fairly new as far as being a person in recovery, correct?
Yes. I came down to Vancouver five and a half months ago, February the 11th of this coming month. I will receive my six-month bob.
Congratulations.
For the clean time. So it's been definitely been interesting going through.
Okay, so how old are you?
49 years old.
49? Wow, you don't look 49.
Thank you.
You look much younger than that. That's, wow. Hey, recovery, like we get younger.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
We get younger. Yeah. And we were talking before the show, we get heavier, well, weight-wise, yeah, but we get younger. That sort of vibrancy comes back in our eyes. So you're an important example of just the demographic of someone from the interior, northern interior of the province of BC, and you came into treatment in New Westminster.
Yes.
What was that like? What was the access for treatment? Did you have many options?
For myself as an individual coming from First Nations background, the options that are looked at are largely from the perspective of a culture-based initiative. And my personal view is I grew up immersed in my culture and fully understand the rules and regulations that a person takes on within their community. I wanted something that would provide me with a little bit more guidance and direction and changing my life effectively with regard to alcohol and drugs, more specifically drugs, mm-hmm. with having a primary focus in drugs, because I was 42 years old when I finally got mixed up in it.
And right. Late bloomer.
Oh, very late. Yeah. Well, I mean, I dabbled in the lighter drugs earlier on in my younger years, but hit the harder stuff as life went on, because I can remember being 15, 16 years old and thinking people that were doing what I was doing when I finished off were just nuts. You know, they're bad. They're the ones that OD. They're the ones that die.
Right.
And they just become statistics.
Right.
And by the end of it, I just about became one of those statistics for First Nations people with regard to addiction.
So you grew up in Williams Lake?
Yeah, I was born and raised in Williams Lake. I spent a couple of years I was born in Williams Lake. I was raised by my grandmother for basically primary life for 5 years, having her instigate and nurture me with regard to our culture and traditions on my mom's side. And then once we moved back to Soda Creek Indian Band, where I come from, I got to know my dad's family, because all the way up until I was 8 years old, I was primarily around my mother's family, learning how our community operated and what our places were within a family structure, right?
Okay.
Learning how to take care of one another.
So a lot of love, like you said, nurturing.
Definitely. And the nurturing and the safety came in the fact that in our family, in our nuclear family, my aunts and uncles were expected to provide supervision and care for me when my grandmother was busy doing work and or working out in the family garden, you know, providing for the family, because she was a single parent at the time too.
Okay.
So when I look at where things started going bad for me, I think it would be when I actually had that shift in caregivers, from primarily spending the majority of my time with mother's family into going into the house with my parents. Because of the fact that I had to, opposed to being taken care of by an aunt or an uncle at the time, I became immersed with a new group of people to deal with. And it was difficult because of the fact that I would be gone for this amount of time throughout a year, and then I'd go back to the house, mm-hmm. and I would have to figure out where I belonged in amongst these other seven kids that were born into our house. And then after Mom and Dad sobered up, as they sobered up when I was 8 years old, so they've been in Alcoholics Anonymous for 41 years.
Wow.
Yeah, so, because their ties come directly from, Mom's ties come directly from Alkali, so.
Okay.
They made the video about the Alkali story when my Uncle Andy worked with the community to clean up the reserve, sober up members of the community to mm-hmm. provide a better life based on his experience.
Okay. And so now with all of that, you know, sort of community, you know, very sort of, I mean, let's face it, the First Nation people, you know, a lot of suppression from, you know, big outside influences for many years. And so you stepping outside of that to find treatments, was there any setbacks to that? I mean, you explained for, you know, for a little bit more substance abuse focus, what were some of the setbacks for you?
I think largely with regard to how closely I was brought up with my mom's family and with the relationship that was developed within my community as I grew older and the expectations set aside for us with regard to what we learned growing up. Just the hardest thing for me has been being away from my family. Mm-hmm. I don't have kids of my own, but I do have my brothers and sisters' kids that I've played a big role in with regard to raising them, providing care, running them to and from sports and whatnot as well. Then you stop and take a look at key role in my life has been my mother and my aunt and my cousins. Like, even though we moved from my mother's community area to my father's home community, the biggest key player in our family still to this day would have been Auntie Doreen and her kids. They were what we knew when we were growing up as kids because of the amount of interaction between them.
Right.
So having just these two little nuclear families, even though Dad had his family at Soda Creek, my main connection was with Auntie Doreen, always feeling safe around her, always knowing that she was there to protect.
So you left, you know, that safety net that you've always known. You know, obviously loneliness, homesick, all of that comes into play. But do you think being away, you know, sort of allowed both yourself and the family to heal apart from, in a sense?
Definitely. It's allowed me to, being down here has allowed me to come into my own and allow me to look at my own issues with regard to getting well. The security and the camaraderie that exists in the facility that I was in and that I still currently plan on being in for the next couple of days is offering me structure and support for when I do go home within the next couple of days to spend a couple of days at home to do that, chat mm-hmm. some time with my mother's family, my dad's family, and my own family, because I have siblings back home and nieces and nephews and my sisters, and them now have grandchildren, so big family.
So how important is that for you, do you think? Not having been in this position before, you know, leaving treatment, leaving the place that you've resided for the last 5 months, you know, got clean, you know, got into recovery. Now you're going home, but only for 4 days. And then you're returning?
I'm coming back to Vancouver. I'm going to be looking for employment down here in one of probably many vast areas with regard to benefiting individuals in probably a social field, a social administrative area for the benefit of people looking to address issues like this or employment issues or just personal skill development stuff.
Okay. So it's a little bit occupational, but as well just staying close
to stay close to the support that I've developed here as well. I think it's this opportunity away from my community and away from my family has allowed me to grow up. And I want for once, I want to spread my wings, and I want to be able to go out and do stuff to show people, you know, once you get off of the reserve, there is a life outside of our little community of 250 people that we come from.
Well, it's funny because you mentioned that at some point we gotta you know, fly the nest, right?
Well, and definitely.
You know, when often you're shipped out to treatment because your family is, you know, upset with you and you know, you're causing a lot of damage. It's like that's not an independence thing that, you know, that it's causing you to leave. That's like your life is in total, you know, crisis, right? So now you're describing, you know, a choice with purpose, you know, to go somewhere and build your life from here on in. How is your sense of hope and thoughts of your future? Like, do you live in sort of fear of, you know, going back to your old ways, or are you hopeful?
No, I don't. Today, I can tell you honestly, right now, I don't have a fear with regard to falling back or slipping, because of the support that I have with regard to the people in the community where I am in New Westminster, as well as in the house where I am. They're still very, very supportive, and I found a couple of key individuals within that community and within the house that I can really depend on and that I can go to with regard to my problems. Whereas it's almost exactly like being back at home in my own community, where I knew I could go to my mom or my dad or one of my brothers or sisters with regard to the issues I was having and have them assist me in, you know, finding a solution.
So that's one of my questions here is, you know, coming from a band or a government that financed your treatment, right? Generally speaking, you know, in my experience of working with funders and whatnot, especially First Nations, it's usually only First Nation specific treatment. So how did the last door come into play in that?
It was a personal. It was one of four institutions that was offered to me to attend to, and looking at me and my personal choices with regard to my growing up and development years from 0 to 5, I figured I'd learned enough. I knew enough about culture after mom and dad sobered up that we got more into our native culture, and they guided us with regard to where we wanted to go and allowed us to develop where we wanted to be. So when I made the decision to go to a treatment center, I decided that I wanted to go to a place that was going to address my issues with regard to alcohol and drugs, and with minimal focus on the cultural aspect of it, because I think if I needed that, I have family in Vancouver as well. My parents and the rest of my family can come down here and we can do that kind of stuff.
So knowing your state of mind and being at the time where you're looking for treatment options, like they listened to you in that request and followed through with that.
Initially, I was fortunate enough to have the support and of the leadership of my mother's community, Alkaline, to get into where I am. And it is primarily looking at the needs of the individuals at the end of the day, if you can present a strong enough argument for it.
Right.
And I think largely looking at the resolve that I have with regard to culture coming secondary, not being a major primary concern of mine because of the need to address the alcohol and the drug issue that I was putting my family through hardship with.
You know, speaking from your own specific experience of First Nations, I guess a lot of the idea behind First Nations specific treatment and focusing on culture is due to the lack thereof of an individual growing up in the culture, in the ceremony, and, you know, that they sort of bring that back into the healing approach, which makes complete sense. But would you recommend you know, a non-First Nations treatment to someone who didn't have the culture?
I think realistically, when you stop and take a look at it, culture exists in many forms with regard to how you're brought up. when I look at the requirement to address the issue, culture can be incorporated, but it shouldn't. I don't think it should be a primary focus for a First Nations person because of the differences in cultural beliefs, customs, and traditions that you grow up in. Because you have, in my region, we have Carrier, Chilcotin, and Shuswap, and all three of them have different culture, customs, and traditions that they go according to. And some of the like even the language barrier between our northern Shuswap and the Okanagan Shuswap. And even that, you get five to ten different dialects just in our region. Yeah.
It's an interesting approach because, like you said, the affliction that an individual is dealing with, from whatever past experiences or, an addiction and all of that's coming into play, like how much can any one ceremony bring about a complete change? That individual, is almost like they need to be taught sort of like unceremonious, methods to just deal with the changes in their life, the changing of the habits, and then once they're sort of responsible again, to bring back. And I'm not talking First Nation specific, I'm talking anybody that has, deep beliefs in.
Well, definitely. When you stop and take a look at my issues, for say, when I came into treatment center, I had the problems with regard to grief loss that I hadn't dealt with in over probably 18 years since my great grandmother passed away. And then we have the going right up until my Aunt Doreen passed away over a period of 18 years, not being able to address those issues with regard to anything as well as the underlying other mental health issues that were sitting there. Never thinking that they were contributing factors, always keeping them separate. Finally, at the end of the day, all of it just came to a head when we were sitting in Prince George after one of my last hurrahs up there. My sister just told me, how do we do this for you? And I said, told her just to get a hold of Mom's family, because at the end of the day, for me to get the help I needed the direction to come from Mom's family, because those were the people that provided care for me, and those were the people that would understand or would take the time to understand where finding what I needed at the end of the day.
Wow, so much faith in something outside of ourselves is the story there, eh? So they must be pretty happy that you're coming home.
They are. They're very happy. My mom and dad can't. Like mom's on the couch, and she's wondering, okay, hurry up, how much longer? And my aunt is talking about planning a dinner for me when I go back to my mom and dad's place.
That's so great.
My first day.
I'm so glad to hear that you guys are going to be able to connect. And even though like your plan is to move back down here, like everybody's just going to be so at peace, knowing that like you are who you are now, and.
Well, definitely, and I mean, just creating the guidelines with regard to the way the program has been structured that I attended. Receiving what they call gifts of recovery, mending relationships and that sort of stuff. One of the bigger factors with me was not being able to discuss with my cousin for issues for the past 3 years since her mother passed away, because that was one of our things. We could depend on each other wholeheartedly, but in the last probably 3 years, it was just slowly teetered away. But with her focusing her grief loss and me just down spiraling into my addiction in order to address that for myself.
Well, is a wonderful story to be a part of and listen to here. Thanks so much for coming in, Isidore, and sharing this. So much hope out there, for yourself and your family, and all the best.
Thank you.
We got to get out of the studio.
Yeah,
thanks for tuning in, everybody. Thanks for listening. This is you too. I still haven't found what I'm looking for.